everyone, it's Graham here, and I just wanted to give a quick content warning ahead of this episode. It's a live episode recorded with James and Barbara Sherwood at the Revive Festival. Jack and I talked with them about their experience of living abroad, including when they were attacked in their home in Nigeria. Their story includes mention of sexual violence, so if you would find that upsetting, then please be aware that it is mentioned around 11 minutes into the episode. Thank you.
Welcome, folks. This is the Table Talk Commission Live podcast. Come on. I'm Jack.
I'm Graham. Welcome back. This is a very special live episode of Table Talk, the podcast. And actually, it's quite a special one. This is our first ever collab. We are here with the guys from the Commission podcast.
Collaboration. Very welcome.
Collaboration.
Thanks for agreeing to do this. Fantastic.
Absolute pleasure.
So who are you, sorry?
So my name is Adam. I run the media and comms for Commission.
Okay. And talk us through the hat.
Yeah, well, this is just the thing to protect my delicate skin from the sun.
Okay.
That's it.
And are you happy with this, Richard?
What, the collaboration or his hat?
Both.
Yeah, no, the cap, I think it's his comfort hat. It gives him confidence, and that's fine. It's better than the small furry animal that he was hanging around earlier.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, good. Yeah.
Well, if you haven't heard of Table Talk is all about connecting Christianity with current culture. And that exists for people who are curious about the Christian faith. Well, without further ado, should we welcome on our special guest?
That'd be great. Enough from us. We'll pass over the mics.
Before we do that, for our listeners listening back, we're at Revive, which is a festival.
We are. We've definitely forgot to mention that.
I fluffed my lines. I was supposed to mention that.
Okay, well, we're not on the main stage, but maybe next year.
Yeah, we could do.
I feel like we need a whoop from the crowd just so our listeners believe that we're at Revive. So let's go. Okay, wow. So it's real. Lovely. Right, it's real. Come on. Let's welcome on our special guests.
Great.
All right. James and Barbara Sherwood. Let's give them a cheer.
Let's give them a cheer. Give them a hand.
Okay, brilliant. James, Barbara, thanks so much for joining us here. It's brilliant to have you guys.
Well, it's a real joy to be with you and to share with you. Thank you.
Well, we're going to dive straight in. We don't need an icebreaker. It's pretty hot. So I'd like to come to you first, Barbara, just so we can get to know you a little bit. If you were going to share with our lovely audience just one story, like a childhood story that would kind of encapsulate your upbringing, what would it be?
Yeah, quite hard to do this. I think really, I grew up in a loving family, but with not much money. So no extra activities, no holidays, but a local library.
Okay.
And a typical evening would be mom and dad and three kids all huddled up in chairs with our noses in books.
Really?
And if one of my sisters dared to sniff, we'd say, "You're crying."
Wow.
If we went in there, we'd be out in the woods or up on the downs.
So no iPads. No. Wow.
That is so wholesome.
It was wonderful.
And James, how about you? What story would you say sort of sums up your upbringing?
Well, I grew up in Africa. I was born in Kenya, grew up in Zimbabwe. And I used to love going out in the bush, climbing up rocks, climbing trees, that sort of thing. And I remember, you know, there was two worlds, really. There was the world of the white people and the world of the Africans. And in a sense, there's a real division. So we had two people working for us. And I can remember them teaching us how to eat grasshopper. So we fried the grasshoppers and then we took the legs and the wings off and we gave it to my mother. And she said, "Taste this, Mum." She said, "What is it?" I said, "Just taste it." So she tasted it, said, "It's nice." We said, "Mum, it's grasshopper."
Brilliant.
Perfect.
Wow. I don't think... I've never had grasshopper.
It's really good.
Are you joking?
No, it's really good.
It's really good.
Oh, I don't know if I can believe you guys. Right. Okay. So, James, you ended up heading back out to Africa when you were a bit older to basically help strengthen churches back out there. If I'd have said to you as a teenager, that's what you're going to be doing, how would you react to that?
No way.
No way. Why?
No way. I was thinking I was going to grow up. I wanted to be a physicist and be involved in engineering type work. And then, the more I thought about religion, I thought, well, they're all the same. You know, it's all religions lead to God and it's just about being good. If you're good enough, God accepts you and that's fine. So that was really, my view of religion at that time.
OK,
Okay. And Barbara, I think I'm right in saying that you headed out to Nigeria in your 20s. Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
And so no kids at that point, but you then had a family out there. Yep. I mean, that seems, and you had no family there at the time when you moved. So that seems like it's kind of on the riskier end of things.
Further from the library, I'd say.
A little bit, yes. A bit removed from the library.
Yeah.
But so have you always been adventurous and a bit of a risk taker?
No. That's not me, really. I was always a kind of fussy eater. I enjoyed being active, but I'd never traveled outside the UK. I actually first went to Ghana for a couple of years as part of my studies and lived in a village on my own for a couple of years. That cured me of fussiness and fear of insects and things like that. When I went out tonight to Africa first, my dad said, she'll be back in 2 months. But 2 years later, I was still there. So.
Come on.
Wow, amazing.
Do you think that was a bit of James kind of rubbing off on you? Or?
That was before James, actually.
That was before James. Yeah. So that was just you. Yeah. Fantastic. Right, guys. A theme of this weekend, we're at a festival, just for our listeners to remind them. A theme of our festival, we're thinking about suffering. And there's a lot of different worldviews when it comes to suffering, a lot of different opinions on the meaning behind suffering. And I just wondered, particularly your time in Nigeria, what were you exposed to in terms of the kind of prevailing worldview in Nigeria when it came to suffering?
I think I would say there are three different groups of people. First of all, there's the Muslims. And, you know, there are very, very many Muslims in Nigeria. It's something like 45% or more are Muslims in Nigeria, particularly in the north. You know, something like 40-50% Muslims. And their worldview is, well, it's God, inshallah. You know, if God wills it, that's it. Then you've got the traditional worldview where the people, if they're suffering, well, I've offended my ancestors or the gods are not pleased with me. So it's, you know, why am I suffering the way I am? Because I've done something to offend them. And then you get the Christian worldview, but sometimes it's really mixed up. And the Christian worldview is God has got a purpose and a reason for what's going on. But yet many in the churches are still kind of holding on to that traditional worldview. So if God has not dealt and kindly with me, if I'm suffering, then I will go back to the ancestral worship.
Okay.
And I think as well, generally there's a kind of, there's so much more of it and it's out in the open. There's a kind of, well, it's going to happen.
More suffering, you mean? Yeah. It's just more prevalent, more obvious.
You know, for one time we got into a taxi and we asked her, where's the seatbelt? And without any hesitation, he said, what makes you think your life so precious?
Wow.
So that was your experience. So you saw much more suffering. Yeah. You experienced much more suffering in Nigeria versus what you had seen in the UK, for example.
Yeah, I mean, it's here in the UK. It's hidden away more, but there is more there. Within a few weeks of arriving, one of our friends was murdered. Another friend was murdered a few years later. People died of sickness, sometimes because there just wasn't good medicine. So a really great guy we were friends with got sick and died because there was no medicine. People died in accidents. Again, close friends of ours killed in an accident. It's just much more there.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. I know, James and Barbara, that you lost a child fairly early on when you were in Nigeria, really tragically. I wondered if you could just share with our listeners, if you wouldn't mind, just what happened and how that affected both of you.
Yes, we had come back to the UK for some leave and we were staying with my parents and we'd left our son, David, sleeping in his little cot and we were downstairs and I needed something from the bedroom. So I went up to get it and I looked over at the cot and I saw he'd pushed himself right up to the end and I listened carefully. I couldn't hear him breathing. So I picked him up and I you know, suddenly he was all floppy and I rushed downstairs. And, you know, just then that's where we began to grapple with what's happened. Called the doctor and they came very, very quickly, but they couldn't do anything. It was too late. So that was a real tragedy for us.
And we're thankful we were in the UK because the coroner got back to us quite quickly and said this was just an unexplained cot death. It's not your fault. Nothing you could have done. But it was hugely painful.
Mm. Yeah. I'm so sorry. Yeah. And would you say that was probably the first and biggest tragic thing in your life? And how did that affect you both?
For me, it was the first biggest thing. Pregnancies had been difficult, but I had a really healthy child who was thriving and just suddenly gone.
And
you think, well, you know, why would God give you a child, take the child away? What's the point in that? I think we, as James said, we were here, but we had to go back to Nigeria quite quickly, and going back without a child and having to say, oh no, he's dead. And then everybody's saying, oh, don't worry, you'll have another one. And think, I don't want another one. I want this one.
Yeah.
And for me as well, I struggled a bit with feeling guilty. Maybe I should have done something differently. So it was quite a tough time.
And then you, also, James? You know, also just looking after when we had another child and the concern, is this going to repeat itself? And I can remember one night we were sleeping and then I woke up and I couldn't hear our son breathing. And I thought, oh, no. Is this happening again? So I, you know, I really, you know, anxiety came in at that point. Fortunately, you know, and God willing, that it wasn't happening. He was breathing all right.
And James and Barbara, I mean, losing a child like that would be, you know, more suffering than a lot of people would go through in a lifetime. But I think later in your life, you were then attacked in your home by armed robbers. Would you mind sort of sharing a bit around what happened there and what that experience was like?
Yeah, Barbara can tell the story because I my memory's blank on it.
Okay. We were in our home with our kids, and we had a man who kind of slept outside, keeping an eye on the property. And we heard noise and we heard gunshots, and we realised that this guy had been attacked. So we decided we'd open up the house, let them take what they want, and then get help for him. But as James was opening the house, they shot him in the head. And just left him there. Then they came into the house, threatened the kids with guns, turned the house upside down, and I was kicked and pushed around and then taken a room, raped and locked up and left to sort our lives out.
And, I mean, what have been some of the longer-term sort of implications of that, the trauma and that suffering? What has that looked like over the following years?
It was 4.5 years. We had to have emergency flight back to the UK and then 4.5 years of reconstructive surgery for James. And we just lost our life there completely overnight and just pick up the pieces here.
Obviously, for me, the big things is that it's affected the left side of my face, that all this side, the nerves have been severed on the left side. I don't see, I don't hear on the left side. So if you want to be with me, but you don't want to talk to me, please come sit on my left side and I'll ignore you.
And you can say what you like.
Yeah, you can really say what you like. But, you know, I it's affected my brain as well, that there's brain damage, and I find memory is much, much harder. So, you know, there's frustration. What is it? Who's that? The name of that person? So, sorry, you know, I can see lots of friends here, but I can't remember your names. And so often, you know, you come up to me and I'm thinking, what's his name? What's his name? You know, but it is difficult to remember names, to remember events and things that have happened. So there's a bit of a blank there. I'm much more slow in working things through. And then there's more anxiety comes in. So I think those are the big things that have really affected me.
Mm. So it's had a big effect on the family. You know, the kids had to learn to relate to their dad differently. We had to work out how we did it. I get frustrated. I realized I'm a lot less patient than I thought I was. Had to adjust the speed of life. And obviously we couldn't pick up what we were doing before. So it has changed everything. And yet, wonderfully, we're here and James is the same person. Our kids are fine. We're fine.
Wow. Amazing. Wow. For the listeners here and a lot of listeners back home, they just might hear that. I mean, it's so tragic and so severe. Very few people would have experienced what you guys have. And yet you guys would still call yourselves Christians. You'd still say that you trust God. Can you help explain that to someone who, you know, wouldn't be a Christian, just wouldn't understand that at all? What, surely you would be so angry and, turn your back on your faith. So could you explain that to our listeners?
Yes. This is something I had to grapple with when I was about 20. I was involved in a car accident and a friend was killed in that car accident. And at that time, I was struggling with what's the truth about God. You know, I was attending a Bible study, but I wasn't totally confident in understanding it. And then this friend was killed. And I then began to really question, look, this, why has this happened? You know, just a real, real sort of frustration and sadness of losing this friend. And I was studying natural sciences at university. So I was thinking through, now, wait a minute, let's ask the question, is there a God at all? And particularly because I was studying the sciences, I began to say, surely there's got to be a God. This world is so complicated. It's not just a, you know, chance. The laws of physics and chemistry and biology, someone has put those in place. There's a creator. But what's the truth about the creator? Because there's so many different religions. Now, as I thought about that, I began to think, well, when we think about the, those different religions, there is one, the truth about Jesus Christ, that is written in history. It's not just someone said, this is the truth and wrote it down, but it's actually written in history. That there is these disciples of Jesus who are following him, and then Jesus dies on the cross. And what was it that turned them around, that made them believe this is still the truth? It's because they actually saw Jesus Christ rise from the dead. And so it was that evidence for the resurrection that convinced them this is true. And Jesus himself made the claim. He said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me. So it's not just, you know, Christianity is a nice way, is one of the ways. No, he's making the claim, this he is the truth. I am the way, the truth, and the life. And that's what really forced me to say, I have to accept this. I was reluctant to, but then I said, I've got to accept it. And suddenly, you know, a sense of, yes, this is true. It really is true.
And well, I can tell you're a scientist, for starters. Definitely. Like the way you've come up. But what about the emotional reaction, Barbara, as well, yeah, to this yeah attack and yeah everything that happened to you? Yeah. What about your emotions towards God? And are you a scientist as well?
Or no.
Maybe you have a go at answering the question.
Yeah,
well.
And particularly, I mean, like, were you angry with God? Like, did you ever want to?
I mean, obviously, both of those things made me stop and think. I believe this, and stop and think. So why do I still think God is trustworthy?
Yeah.
And it just made me think a lot harder about what I do believe and about what is the truth about Jesus Christ and his death and his resurrection. Mm. Was I angry at God? No, I wasn't angry at God, but I was angry. It was hugely, hugely painful. And I would cry out to God sometimes, say, God, I hate this. Mm. I can't see how this can be good. I can't see how I can keep going, but I do know you. And then it just made me think harder. Well, why do I think God is trustworthy? And it takes me right back to what James was saying. Why did Jesus come? Why did Jesus die? Why did Jesus rise? And thinking about, well, the Lord Jesus Christ was fully man and he actually understands. He knew what it was like to weep at his friend's grave, to be abused, to be mocked. He understands exactly what that suffering is like. Nobody else saw what happened. Even James didn't know. But the Lord Jesus knew and he understood it. And then to think, well, but how, why do I trust him? Well, why I trust him in the bottom line is because he's dealt with my much, much bigger problem. And my much, much bigger problem is that I spent so much of my life ignoring him, going my own way, complaining at him when things don't work the way I want to. And he is the God who's given me everything I have. And therefore, I deserve his anger and his punishment. But the reason Jesus went to that cross was to take the punishment for that so that I wouldn't. That is a much bigger problem than anything I would suffer in this life. And he's dealt with that one. And then if he's dealt with that one, then I can trust him that he will deal with the other things. I don't understand them. Jesus rose again. He's shown that the very worst thing, absolute injustice, awful suffering, that very thing, God can bring the most incredible good out of it, which is that any of us can actually have a personal relationship with him and a hope of a life with him now, which is in relationship with him, with a God who understands, who's in control, and the promise of a life with him where there's no suffering. Mm. So why do I think he's trustworthy? How do I know he loves me? Not because of what happens, but because of those things. And it was just saying, I'm struggling, but I know these things are true. Just please help me through this next day. Yeah.
And I think the fact that, you know, we realize that God is not actually a remote God.
Mm.
God came into our world as a man. He understands what it is to go through difficult times.
Mm.
Now, sometimes we don't feel he's there. He seems so far away, but actually he really is there and we can talk to him.
Mm. And he's not, you know, he's not shocked by what we say to him.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I wonder how our listeners find that, but mm-hmm. the way you're so real and the way that you spoke about your relationship with God might be surprising to some of our listeners, that he would understand what you've been through, that you could be confused, angry, share those emotions with God, but still trust him because of what he's done for you and Jesus. Thanks for sharing that, Barbara. Thanks, James. Really, one final question, then we're going to hand back to...
One last one from us before we hand over to Richard and Adam. But I think often this topic of suffering is discussed sort of theoretically. It's like, what are the sort of theological or sort of philosophical explanations to why God would allow suffering? And I would love to understand, I mean, what were some of those that you had perhaps heard as you were growing up? What were some of those that resonated with you? And having now experienced so much suffering personally yourselves, how do you reflect on those? And would you give a different answer now to someone who asked?
I think sometimes there's the expectation that, oh, if you're a Christian, then your life will be wonderful. Sometimes that's taught. God will sort out all your problems. I think understanding that actually this world is broken and messy and nobody's exempt from the trouble that comes. Mm. And yet, you know, God is there for you in it. As someone who understands, as someone who's big enough to help you through it, someone who has a wonderful purpose at the end of it. I think we often want to explain everything, and just knowing there's a God who's got it totally in control, I don't have to understand it all.
Mm.
He knows what he's doing. He's shown he knows what he's doing through the most awful thing in the cross. And therefore, I can leave some of that. I don't get it. Mm. Say, let me hold on to what I do know, which is he's good, he's trustworthy, he's loving, he's faithful.
Thanks, guys. Should we show our appreciation to James and Barbara? Right.
Okay, I think we're going to go for a time of Q&A. Over to you, boys.
So we'll give you 30 seconds, talk to the person next to you. What would you like to ask James and Barbara? And then Adam's going to come around with the microphone. You can be the mic man. And then we're just going to have open Q&A. So 30 seconds break.
All right. Is our roving mic man ready?
We're ready. We're ready and moving.
So show of hands, who's got a question for James and Barbara?
Oh, we're in the back first. Up.
I actually wanted to ask, how did you meet? Because I feel like we didn't really cover
that.
That's
a great question. We didn't cover that at all. I'm sorry.
The short story is we met at a church. Barbara then went out to Ghana and I thought, you know, she's going out to do linguistics. And so I thought, okay, it's separate directions. So I thought I better just tell her, you know, I really liked her, but I thought, you know, you better go on your own way. And so she left. And then, you know, after a year, someone said, look, what are you thinking about? You know, this whole thing of marriage. I said, well, there is a lady, you know, I've been thinking a lot about her. Where is she? In Ghana. So he then sort of went on and said, look, you really need to think this through. Is it, will you pursue this relationship or not? And, you know, I eventually thought, yeah. And then I thought, yeah, no, I do. Yes. So.
Strong conviction there, James. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
The scientist. Yeah.
And then. I thought, well, I'll write to her. So I wrote to her and I didn't get an answer.
Actually, he wrote to me and the letter never reached me.
Okay.
So there's some girl in Ghana still thinking, when's this man going to turn up?
Anyway, I wrote again saying, well, I wrote a long letter thinking, was she so frustrated and angry with me? I told her, no, we won't get married. And then she, you know, she's.
And then you put a PS at the bottom.
I put a little PS.
You know, in case you didn't get my last letter, I asked you to marry me. So we said to our kids, don't do what we did.
should we go for another? That was a great question.
Great
Thank
question. Who's next?
I'm curious about what you tell people now when you come alongside them and they're suffering or they're in the midst of something difficult. What's your go-to to tell them that's comforting?
I think number one, I would say is that whatever your suffering is, it's real. Don't compare. You know, whatever it is, it's real and it's painful and it's what you're grappling with. And as we've been hearing this weekend, just listen. Listen well. Don't jump in. But I think if you know them well, if you don't know them well, if there's some way gently to say it's really hard, but this is what's true about the Lord, and I will pray for you, and I'm here for you.
And I think sometimes not trying to tell them what they must do or believe, but saying, look, I don't really understand. You know, you may say, I don't really understand, but I can pray with you and pray for you. Where there is a connection, you know, we can say this, I might tell a bit of my own story and say, I do understand a bit of what you're feeling because this is what happened to me. And it sometimes helps, but lots of listening, I think is the big thing. Yeah.
And giving it time. You know, we talk like this now. We reflected on it and processed it through several years.
Thanks, guys. Okay. Let's keep going. Another question.
Thank you. What did it look like to forgive the men that did that to your family? How did you do that?
I found it really tough. Interesting enough, I think I found it really tough to think what they'd done to James and what they'd done to our family for the sake of a bit of stuff, quite honestly, and thinking if you knew what you'd done just for the sake of some stuff.
Yeah.
But again, you know, that forces you to think hard about, so what do I believe?
I think for me, it was the experience that I went through. As I began to become conscious again, there was a real panic attack. I don't know if any of you had panic attacks, but they're absolutely terrifying. And I would really be afraid of going to sleep because, you know, a panic attack would be, as I'm going to sleep, suddenly, and it was a sense of, God, where are you? God, you've cut me off. You know, I'm separated from you. It's just that sort of awful sense of anxiety that really, really gripped me. And I found that began to really influence me, thinking, this is terrible. And God somehow put in my heart that I don't want this to happen to anybody. And even the people, you know, as I became more aware and able to think a bit more clearly, I began to say, even the people who attacked us, they need to know Jesus and receive that wonderful forgiveness that is in Jesus and not to be afraid, you know, of the future. So even though they, you know, they did something terrible, yes, but God has been so gracious and forgiven me. So shouldn't I forgive other people? I think that's what really, really helped me in grappling with it.
And I think just the other thing to throw in there, in a sense, is knowing that God is a God of justice.
Yeah.
I don't have to kind of try and work that out for myself. He will hold people to account. So I need to leave that to him.
And James and Barbara, thank you so much for sharing all of that with us. And shall we show our appreciation one more time for James and Barbara? Brilliant.